Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We begin by taking a look at a generally not a very tasty and certainly not an attractive mushroom. In fact, it's bitter, but boy does it help your immune system. In fact, of all the mushrooms I know, the chaga, C-H-A-G-A, that's the best. And there's a new article in Green Med Info that I read from Sayer G, good site by the way, that talks about this. And where does it come from? It comes from the birch tree and a fungus that grows on the birch tree. And it's generally used in a tea. Now, because it's a little bitter tasting, I would suggest you add something to it. And it is not just found on the birch tree, but that's where it's most found. It's a kind of a black-brown fungus, typically infects about 30 to 50-year-old trees and can grow on their trunks for another 80 years, producing what is called a conch, C-O-N-K. That's a growth that resembles rust-colored charcoal, and chaga mushrooms have been valued for all of time. In fact, Hippocrates used chaga infusions to wash out wounds. And let's just say, according to Green Med Info, there's four primary benefits from the chaga mushrooms. Number one, it boosts your immune system. And who doesn't want to have a healthier, boosted immune system? Of course. And it modulates your immune response by helping to regulate the secretion of Th1 and Th2 cytokines in immune cells, as well as antibody production. It's water soluble, and the polysaccharide ISP2 in particular has been found to enhance the immune response to tumors and also helps the white blood cells proliferation and increasing production of tumor necrosis factor, a powerful anti-inflammatory agent. Number two, chaga wards off viral infections. Yes, chaga has powerful antiviral activity and was found to suppress the infectivity of pandemic influenza virus in mice, as well as the antiviral drug Tamiflu. It's also effective against multiple feline viruses, and the human viruses herpes, simplex 1, HIV 2, and hepatitis C. Number three, chaga has anti-cancer effects. Chaga extracts have been found to inhibit proliferation of or are cytotoxic to human gastrointestinal tumors, cell lines, as well as human breast, lung, colon, myeloid leukemia, and cervical cancer cell lines. So while decreasing tumor cell proliferation and motility, chaga produces or is low in toxicity to normal cells. And lastly, it helps with a major disease, diabetes. Chaga's polysaccharides have notable anti-diabetic effects in animal studies and can reduce fasting blood sugar levels, improve glucose tolerance, and ameliorate insulin resistance. That's pretty good, right? Then we go on to a study from the Francis Crick, C-R-I-C-K Institute. They found that molecules in vegetables, one more reason to go vegan and juice your vegetables also, can help ease lung infection. They found broccoli, cauliflower in particular, help to maintain a healthy barrier in the lungs and ear and to erase infections. So you have to look at what's in there to find that how it works. Now, they found that kale, cabbage, and broccoli and cauliflower were the best. All right? It activates a set of genes that can help. All right? So that's something else, something natural, non-toxic, and easy to do. Good news for those of you who've been following the Mediterranean lifestyle, because it's healthy. Not just the diet, which is very healthy, and I don't care if you're in Greece or Spain, if you're in Italy or France, when you're in the Mediterranean area, you find that people are more relaxed. You find that people take their time doing things. You find that people have conversations. Even when they disagree, they don't yell and scream at you. You have a conversation. You find that their students are far more aware of world events. They're very, very intelligent. Now, that doesn't mean the diet's perfect, but it means it's healthy overall. And from the Mediterranean diet, you can choose which items you want to include, because meat is very low on the diet, dairy is low, but fish is very high, but beans and whole grains, pastas and sauces, and fruits and vegetables and olives and olive oil, yeah, very healthy compared to anything in the United States except our vegan diet. According to this is a study out of Spain and Harvard University, they found that adhering in a non-Mediterranean environment, like living in the United States, you're going to lower your risk of all cause of cancer death. That's right. Study one of the ones that examined the health benefits of the Mediterranean diet in a non-Mediterranean context, and then took a look at what it means. And what it means is if you follow the diet, you're far less likely, with all of the rich abundance of fruits and vegetables and starchy vegetables, sea vegetables, whole grains, nuts and seeds, and fish, and all of the olives. And they have like 100 types of olives and olive oils. So when you're eating slow, you're eating healthy, you don't have all the salts and sugars, then you're promoting adequate rest, and they take a siesta in the daytime. That doesn't mean they all go to sleep, they don't. But they take it easy for about 3 hours, from noon to about 3 o'clock. And then they have a light dinner later in the evening, what most people would. I remember I came out of a opera in Italy, and it was wonderful because it was an ancient amphitheater. And I'm thinking, where are the microphones? You know, I don't see the speakers. And yet a bunch of us who got there just as it started, there was no room, so we just stood at the back. We heard everything perfectly. It was just the dynamic of it. In any case, afterwards, everyone went out to have dinner, and it's 10 o'clock at night. But they frequently eat a small meal later in the evening, and they also have a rather substantial breakfast. But you start taking a look at how they live and how important family is, how important their friendships are, how important trust is. It's a big deal. Because I want to ask people when I travel, what do you value in your relationships? And time and again, I've heard trust. When I can trust someone, all right, good. Shouldn't we be concerned about the same thing, having people in our lives we can trust? I think so. But you notice they don't rush through a meal. They take their time, and they talk, and they're relaxed. So that kind of a relaxed, family-oriented, community-oriented lifestyle, lots of rest, exercise, socializing, very important. It lowers your risk of cardiovascular disease death, and the diet lowers your risk of cancer death. So two things we can benefit from: living longer and being healthier. And this study had over 110,000 people and 9-year follow-up, so it was a good study. Now, from the University of Essex in the United Kingdom, why parental pressures are taking the fun out of children's play. Just for a moment, think back, all of you. Do you remember when you were a child? Remember before you went to first grade, around 6 years of age? Do you remember you go out in the morning and play, come back, and you know your mom would have, in my family it was Campbell's tomato soup. They change the soup every so often, a grilled cheese sandwich, glass of milk, and then off we go again, running out to play. We're all wiry, we're healthy and thin. When milk came in the morning, it wasn't homogenized, it was pasteurized. But you had all that sweet cream on top, mom making oatmeal, steel cut oat milk, and she put a little bit of that cream in there with some raisins and nuts. So we had a different life growing up. We come in at the evening and wash up, sit and have dinner. People don't do that today. In fact, if anything, parents today, not all parents, but an awful lot of upper mobile parents, scientists, engineers, professors, people who don't always have an advanced education, have less of that total control over their children's life than those with a lot of education. In fact, the more successful you become in your career, and I just saw the statistics this morning, there are 22.2 million millionaires in the United States. 22 million millionaires. That does not include the professional class. So you're dealing with, when you're adding their family members, you're dealing with a lot of people. So all these people, let's just say they have just one child, and so they want to provide for their child, but they don't provide themselves. They don't give quality time, as we all got when we were growing up. We all had dinner together. We go to drive in movies together. We go for rides. Remember going for a ride in the country and on Sunday, just ride out in the country, windows down. It was wonderful. That really happened. Kind of doesn't seem possible today because everything is intentional. There's no just free time as there was then. It wasn't the stresses also. People didn't have to worry about being foreclosed on their home at that time because we had a thriving working middle class. We had good union representation and collective bargaining. We had maternity leaves. We had a quality life. Wasn't perfect, but boy, it was better than what I'm saying today. Our parents didn't pressure us except do your homework. We had to bring the report cards home. Mom and Dad would look at it, Mom first, and then Dad, and then we'd get a little lecture. If we didn't do well, what's wrong? Then they would say, okay, you do your homework. If you need help, we'll help you. Well, today, what is the likelihood that with COVID restriction, that kids did their homework, kids studied, kids learned? To the contrary, all the studies are just the opposite. We have the lowest intellect today in younger people than in American history since these have been recorded. People's IQs are lower today. Their capacity for critical thinking is less. Their capacity to deal with real life issues is less. Their staying in a constant state of angst is more. So, with all this money that about 20% of the American population is accumulating, and they control the standard of living, look at us, and people do. But the average person can't pull themselves up by their bootstrap, that's a myth. But they can still be determined to have a quality of life, even with having less. Because maybe they're looking at a quality of life instead of a standard of living. In any case, all this brings pressure upon the child. Let's just say you have two parents, one's a doctor, one's a lawyer. And the child is listening and seeing how they relate to each other and to the issues of the day. So one day it's, we're going to go fishing this Sunday? No, but soon. Okay. And then we're going to go on that trip out to Teton National Park in Wyoming? When I can put it in my schedule, absolutely want to do it. You're going to come see me in my basketball game tonight? Yes. None of it happens. But we're provided, the child is provided with stuff. As if the parent says, I can't be there for you, but my money can. Well, then one day the child realizes that they couldn't select their parents, and if they could, they'd probably select different ones. And then the child is pressured to perform. We did well. Look at what we did. Look at how much we sacrificed to give you this. And then you start realizing the parents are disappointed in their children. They bring them in to therapy as if therapy's the answer, as if getting counselors, nannies. Take a look at the Hollywood children. Not all, but a lot of them. I know some. I know three of my friends were billionaires, self-made, back in the 1960s and 70s, the old-fashioned way. Then take a look at their success. It was measurable. And then take a look at their failures. They were phenomenal. Broken marriages, destroyed relationships, alienation of their children. Now, I was close to all these people. And yet they wouldn't stop. They just had to have more because of their own insecurity. Well, today, modern-day parenting pressures and expectations are leading to the death knell for children enjoying spontaneous play. We used to do what we wanted to. Now, this is from University of Essex. Whilst parents have always felt some responsibility for their children's development and should, the heightened intensity of parenting in recent years, which now means I'm doing the right type of parenting, we're going to virtue signal our kid. And this is a true story. This comes from someone that I know personally for decades because we work out together. What are you going to be doing this summer? Well, I'm going to be traveling, finishing up my film. What are you doing? Well, I got more work to do. I've got more of my clients in crisis. You're a money manager. What's the crisis? They've overspent, all of them. They're spending more than what they're earning. Why? To keep up with each other. It's all competition. Tell you how bad it is. One of my clients, who lives two blocks away from here, is sending his son to summer camp. Good. What's wrong with that? Nothing's wrong with that, except summer camp is up near New Paltz, and that's about an hour and a half drive. That's all. And there's a bus going up there. Nice bus, right? But he wants his kid, who demands to be flown up in a private jet. The trouble is, there's no airport near there, so they got to go in a smaller jet to another small airport and then have a chauffeur pick the kid up and drive him over to the camp, because he has to be able to be seen coming in, has to be able to say, oh, I just flew up from New York City. That whole effort, going to the airport and the flight and then landing and being driven, it's 5 hours. 5 hours, but everyone knows, wow, your parents must be rich. That costs a lot of money. Yeah, it does. Sometimes about $3,000 per hour in flight time. And he said, isn't that ridiculous? But then another child, his parents have a chef going up to prepare their meals. Now, when I went to camp, when you went to camp, there was a mess hall, right? We all went in, wooden table, sat down, where we had a buffet and we could go around and eat whatever we were served. Nothing gourmet, just regular food. And that was it, all right? Well, no. Now, the child has to have not just any chef, has to have a well-known chef, a chef that might charge $5,000 to prepare a meal, one meal for a child, plus the expense of getting him up and back, etc. Who does this? Who spends this? Who's got that kind of money? Those 22 million millionaires, they're all competing against each other, and their children are picking this up. And why is this important? Because then that fuels a child's sense of entitlement. It creates an artificial bubble separating us, we, our tribe, our group, better than yours, and suddenly they're completely insulated from the realities of life. Tell me about what it's like to be a poor person living in Kansas. I don't know any poor people. None of my friends are poor. And then they can tell you how much each family's worth. Wow. Okay. What happens when that kid goes to school? They expect to be treated in a certain way. All right. What happens when a teacher in high school or college or graduate schools wants to see if they have learned critical thinking? Have they read the classics? Can they do any form of extemporaneous discussion on any topic with meaning and purpose and bring all the pieces together? No, none of them can. That's your parenting today. That's who's responsible for the woke. And then everyone else feeds on that. Just saying. And this study shows it. This research suggests when is leaving less time for children to play independently, where they learn for themselves the risks and dangers of outdoor play, how to relate with people. No. These helicopter parents, these highly educated, mainly Caucasian females in their 30s who have children, whoa. That poor child doesn't know what they're in for. And this was published in the Journal of Sociology and Health and Illness. But who reads that? And who would do anything about it in any case? So we're increasing children's sedentary activity and allowing them to spend unlimited amounts of time in artificial technologies. That's the latest on health and healing. And I like to cover things that are very important. Oh, and by the way, for those who are using coenzyme Q10 in NAD, nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide, good for you, because the latest study from University of Barcelona in Spain show it helps aid women overcome chronic fatigue syndrome. How about that? Brand new information. We're going to take a break and come right back. And don't forget, you can sign up for the Gary and All Daily Newsletter. And I mean, it's loaded with information that I can't do on the air because I just don't have all the time. Go to GaryandAll.com to see how you can subscribe. And also, today I'm going to do my classroom on the air on how to deal with regrets. And we all have regrets, and lots of them. And how do we keep from always second-guessing and beating up on it? I should have done that. I shouldn't have done that. Well, there's a way of letting the past be the past so you can be present. That'll be my classroom on the air. And you'll go later today to Gary and All YouTube or Odyssey or Rumble, and you can download it. And I don't deal with these customers there. I don't deal with controversial issues. Nothing like that. I deal with things that are common sense, reasonable, self-evident, right in front of us, solutions to life issues, and we somehow don't see them. And what we can't see and what we're not looking for, we can't use as tools to change. All right, so we're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. Just thought I'd acknowledge a couple people who have sent some very nice little statements. This is Nirva, N-I-R-V-A, from Stowe, Massachusetts. Here's what she says. I'll bypass some of the flattery. She said, "Dear Dr. Noll, I was feeling so happy." Call me Gary, I'm too young to be a doctor. "I was feeling so happy. I've been following you for the past 14 years or so that I said I should let you know. In 2015 or 16, I attended your meat industry documentary viewing at a church in New York. I stood," by the way, that was not a church. That was down at the Ethical Culture Center. And about 900 people were there. Good crowd. "I stood next to you and wanted to ask you a question about how I could work in your circle. But the words could not be said at that time. So I'm amazed at, you know, your accomplishments, etc. Every time I," here's what's important, "every time I listen to your show, I learn something that I can apply into my life. I've gotten many of your books. I followed your juicing program for 18 months and felt rejuvenated. I don't know how to thank you for all the ways that you have opened my mind to health and wellness. I feel that you're very special in so many ways, and you're not another just average person. You try more. I'm grateful, and stay blessed." Thank you. That was such a nice thing to say. And I was kind of reading through it for you. Here's my takeaway on that. Why do we do what we do? When we get up in the morning, are we honoring our authentic self, or are we honoring our cultural, religious, social, political, ideological, or class responsibilities? Are we able to live a life that's authentic to us with honor and privilege, meaning the privilege of being alive another day and the gifts that we can share with others because of that? And if we can, then you're giving every gift that is important to you, you're giving it to someone else. So at that moment in life, for whatever reason, is not able to have the life that they deserve. And I believe everyone deserves a good life. Even those people I disagree with. In fact, I try to help the people, if they need my help or want my help, who are totally opposed to me on every level. That's really an insignificant issue. We're not going to have everyone in our life that agrees with this, and hopefully we don't have anyone who just disagrees with this. But what's important, we shouldn't disagree with ourselves about raising the bar of everything in our life. Take a step up. When it's not expected to do something for others, do something for others. I just watched a clip this just now. I don't have it logged into our database in New York. It'll be up there tomorrow. But it's just a guy, and you don't see the guy. He sounds like he's in his 20s. You see a side shot of him, and he just goes into this regular store, and it's got clothing and stuff, and he says to the woman, could I use your loudspeaker to make an announcement? She said, what kind of announcement? That everything for the next 5 minutes is free in the store. She says, well, it's not free. Someone's got to pay for it. I'll pay for it. You're going to pay for everything? We got a store full of people. That's okay. Good for them. So he goes up there, and you see him making an announcement that for the next 5 minutes, everything in the store is free. And I'll meet you at the counter. And then you see people buying stuff. They're not rushing all over to buy. They're just buying stuff. And a woman comes up and says, I just bought my son, whose birthday today, a bike. And thank you. And then a woman comes over. And she says, why are you doing this? Why? And he says, well, don't you deserve a gift? I don't think we appreciate how hard people work at just surviving. There's 200 million. Listen again, 200 million Americans who can't write you a check for $1,000. It would bounce. And 100 million can't write you a check for $500. Now then imagine, how are they buying food? The only food they can buy in most cases is a meal, you know, like a fast food meal for $5. And then what's that lead to? Disease, obesity, diabetes, heart disease. But a lot of people say that's all I can afford. For them, the price of electricity has gone up 30% in the last year. So on the one hand, we have a government saying we don't have a problem with inflation, and yet ask the average person, not a rich person, not an upper middle class person, not one of the 22.3 millionaires in the United States with two members in their family, let's say a spouse and one child, that's three people, that's 63 million people minimum who can buy what they want, travel where they want, first class, private jets, extra homes, all the clothes, stuff they clearly don't need, and yet we have 200 million people who can't even get what they absolutely need, health care and food and roof over their home, of their heads. So when someone goes out of their way, as this young gentleman did, and we don't know a thing about him, but look at the response when you see this clip. We're posting this later today on my show notes. Look at the people's surprise and graciousness. So if you think you can't make someone else's day better, then you haven't tried. Ask people. Ask people, what can you do to help them? See what the responses are. Some people might not want you to ask that, but that's okay. Someone will give you something that makes sense. I have a clip I'm going to try to get in today or tomorrow. It'll be in the footnotes. And again, it's rather quiet on the audio, so it's more video, but I'll just tell you what it is. And again, this is a different person. Goes over to a woman who's fretting because she's sitting for a long time in this filling station and she doesn't have the money to fill up her car. So the guy said, how much gas would you like? She said, well, what I need to get home, I don't have enough money, so I don't know what right now in this moment to do. She says, no problem. He fills up her gas tank. And she says, but I can't pay for this. What do you do? He said, I'm paying for it. Wow. That is someone who found their spirit today. And I know there are people like Jeremiah, the Oracle from Harlem, and others. Lots of people in this audience, they go out of their way to show that they're living a spiritual life. And the only way you can show you're living a spiritual life is be spiritual. Care about others, even if they don't ask. Watch it. It's up on Gary Null Footnotes for today. But I'm going to speculate, and I'd like your input. I really want you to call and give me your input on this. This is a short clip. It's only about 6 minutes, 30 seconds long, but it really addresses something that's happening that exceeds ideology and politics and class and ethnicity and age. It exceeds all that. It's as if you pull back far enough, now you see the entire picture. And then I'm going to give you my opinion of what we can face or likely to face starting this year and going forward for the next 5 years. Then you could agree or disagree, but I'd like to hear from you. All right? This is an interesting clip. And this man on this issue has got it right, Professor Victor Davis Hanson, on, quote, what caused the rise of tribalism in America. Now to the clip, please.
So how did this happen? How did we start to re-tribalize? I think part of it came out of the 60s, that in the eagerness to create parity, groups that were extremists said, you know what? It's not enough to be equal because we were unequal for all these years, so we have to be more than equal. I think most Americans were willing under the Johnson administration to say, okay, we'll have a period of 10, 20, 30, 40 years of institutionalized prejudice, and we won't call it that. We won't call it quotas. We'll call it affirmative action. So if somebody is not of the majority ancestry, i.e. white, then we will give extra consideration given the idea of past bias or maybe the fumes of present bias. And we were all accepting of that. But as the so-called white population started to, in proportional terms, decline a little bit, and more groups decided that they were victimized, then the number of people with complaints against the majority grew. I think it's often underappreciated that during the Obama administration, specifically 2009 to 2016, a radical concept emerged that really threatened the very foundations of U.S. citizenship. And this was the idea of diversity. Remember that affirmative action had been focused and targeted on the idea of the historical sin of slavery and the idea that because people looked African, they were not fully American. In the United States during the Civil War, the efforts to stop Jim Crow, the Civil Rights Movement was trying to erase that blemish from its history. But under the idea of diversity, other groups that were not African American, not the 12% of the population, but other groups that were, quote, not white, were suddenly aggregated. And so the number of people that had claims on the majority for past grievances were anybody that was not white. And think what that entailed. You could immigrate from the Punjab and you could sell your farm for $200,000 an acre and be quite wealthy, arrive in California, and suddenly you were diverse. You would never experience discrimination in the United States, but you were diverse. Why were you diverse? For one reason. You were not white. At least you could claim you were not white. You could come from South America. You could be a Chilean aristocrat. You could come from Brazil. You could be a doctor from Nigeria. And all of a sudden, whatever your particular ethnic heritage was, you were beyond the old binary that white America was trying to come to grips with the prejudice shown and discrimination institutionalized against Native American people and black people. And so diversity said 30 to 33% of the population now doesn't feel part of America because we feel as non-white people that whiteness was toxic. Okay, notice what it does. It destroys entirely the concept of class. Remember what Marx said, the story of history is a binary. It's one of oppressors fighting oppressed, the exploiters fighting the exploited, the victimizers warring against the victimized. And it's all based on money and class and privilege. But when you apply that to the United States, it never really worked. Not with a huge middle class that was the basis of citizenship, not with the idea that race in the Constitution is not mentioned, it would be incidental, not essential to Americans, not anything. But all of a sudden, when you change class considerations and you say class doesn't matter and class is no longer synonymous with race, we could say maybe in the early 20th century still, or the 19th century, people who were not white or recent immigrants or their descendants from slaves economically faced greater obstacles. But today, for example, the highest income group by ethnic ancestry are Asian Americans. If you look at the fastest income gains of the last 20 years, they occur in Asian Americans and Hispanic Americans. And so what I'm getting at is race and class are not the same. And yet we're supposed to look at race now as victimizers. And so all of these anomalies appear. We're in this Orwellian world where Oprah Winfrey, from a $90 million home in Montecito, is talking to Meghan Markle from a $15 million home in Santa Barbara nearby. And what are they talking about? All of the injustice and the oppressions they've suffered as people with African-American ancestry. But their very status belies that fact. Or we have LeBron James, who's worth $1 billion, who tweets and he goes onto Facebook and says how unfair the United States is and how discriminatory it is. But remember, class and race are not identical anymore. And so I'm speaking from Hillsdale, Michigan, and when I ride my bike, I see some of the poorest people that I've ever seen in rural Michigan. They happen to be white. It's indifferent to me. But where I live, there are Mexican immigrants who are far wealthier in California. And yet we're going to back to a tribal identification that has nothing to do, in many cases, with victimization. And we're saying if you can posit a tribal identification, then the state or the government or the people owe you something. And this is headed for disaster. We know that from history that tribalism inevitably will end up like the former Yugoslavia or the strife we saw in Iraq or Rwanda.
Now, you can agree or disagree with that. I'll share my point of view. Then I'd like to hear yours at 888-874-4888. I've always been an optimist. And for a period of my life, I believed that if we gave the right information to institutions or individuals or governmental agencies that were doing the wrong thing, someone would say, we've been doing the wrong thing, let's correct this for the betterment of everyone. But I never saw it happen. I never saw a single governmental agency become smaller, more responsible, and non-political. The decisions the Environmental Protection Agency made, or the Nuclear Regulatory Agency made, or the Food and Drug Administration, or the CDC, these were always made based upon who controlled the management. And the management always is someone from corporate America leaving their job temporarily, going in and managing an industry in the government, the whole department that directly impacts their former bosses. It's like when Halliburton was run by Dick Cheney. He leaves there, goes over, becomes vice president, and then goes back. And the same was true of other officers, like Michael Taylor from Monsanto, going over to the USDA, then over to the FDA, then back to Monsanto. Who did that benefit? Didn't benefit the American people, benefit the corporations they're coming from. So I finally, one day, I took a look, and I realized that we have a systemic, not racism, a systemic inequality in every agency. Those who come from corporate interest into governmental interest, and therefore have the public-private relationship, always benefit the corporate interest. Never the public. You can't show me with trillions of dollars spent, a single city in the United States that was rejuvenated, where all industries that were once were brought back, and people who had once lived there and were union workers now had a living wage job, and that the neighborhoods had been cleaned up. There was no unemployment, and crime disintegrated when suddenly people had the economic opportunity to not struggle to buy food or pay bills, but did so because they had disposable income. Well, that hasn't happened. And yet, look how many times it was promised. So now I'm at the point where I don't trust anything is going to change, because it hasn't. No matter what administration is in power, Democrat or Republican, they're all corrupt, because they're all serving the people who put money in their pocket and control their campaigns. So if I know that nothing's going to change, and that either one party or another will try to win an election through any deception they can, where everything given by corporate America as well as government agencies is disinformation, and that almost always the opposite is true than what they tell us, and that is borne out. We have now no longer have to think of ourselves as, am I even thinking right when I'm challenging the COVID? And yes, you are thinking right and should have challenged COVID, but unfortunately, you thought the government would do the right thing, and the scientists who are supported by the government would do the right thing, and doctors would do the right thing, and hospitals. Nobody did the right thing. They all did wrong, all of them. The entire country went crazy, all right? And if you deny that, then what kind of altered dystopian nightmare are you living in? Everybody betrayed you. Everybody punished you. If you didn't get vaccinated, even if you had legitimate reasons, you were punished. And then when you went to speak, Facebook, Google, Wikipedia, Twitter attacked you, destroyed your reputation, tried to cancel you, no matter what your reputation and credentials and the quality of your character, didn't matter. None of that is relevant. So now that I see that nothing is going to change, nothing under any circumstances can change, because those in power have codified that power by laws and rules, and they've allowed the public to become both disoriented to the truth of things, but also distracted from the reality of what is essential. As a result of that, we will talk and have endless debates on trivia or insignificant issues, and none of the important issues are being dealt with. So what do I see happening? Here's what I see. I see that entire states will be of a uniform mindset for those who believe in wanting to be controlled, wanting to have other people denigrated and attacked and destroyed and imprisoned, wanting to have other people have no freedom of speech, and if they even open their mouth before they can exhale, throw them in prison. California, Oregon, Washington, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Georgia, District of Columbia, Illinois, Indiana, Missouri. These are some of the places, but not all, that will create entire realities based upon tribalism. And yet they won't see it. And the average person will maladapt to it, as they've done for most of the things in their adult life. But I also see a large group of people, probably around half the population or more, once they start seeing, my God, these people who are functional idiots, they're just going mad. And I don't want to be around these people. I don't want to be living where, you know, if I don't use the right pronoun, I can be fined or imprisoned. So these people are going to go to the safe spaces, at least at this point, like Texas, South Dakota, and Florida. And there you're going to have an influx of people by the millions. I expect Florida to grow by 2 to 3 million people, and Texas probably up to 10 million people over the next 5 years. Just based upon, we're reverting back to a primordial limbic mind or brain tribal society. That's where I say we're going. I do not see any opportunity for that to change unless someone like Robert F. Kennedy or DeSantis were elected, because they're smart. One's a Democrat representing the old Liberal Democratic Party, and they would have to literally deconstruct and destroy the entire deep state. Do you really think they're going to allow him to do it? They didn't allow his father. They didn't allow his uncle, President of the United States. They were never held accountable. The deep state's never held accountable for anything, and they can do anything. So I am an optimist for those who are willing to stand up and say no, and if need be, move to where you have an opportunity to still maintain your freedom of expression and life and purpose without constantly being attacked. In the other places, no. No. People who want to be there, good, be there. That's what I see happening. 888-874-8888 is our number. And we're going to go to another clip here. And this is a short clip, but it's on environmental issues. This is the wind turbines, which I'm opposed to because it takes more money, more resources, more natural minerals, more carbon dioxide pollution to make a windmill than what the windmill will return in wattages to create electricity. It's big business for those who are behind this, for the legislators promoting it and subsidizing it, and for the corporate interest. But it's killing the whales. I care more about the whales. And here's a short, brief part of a documentary, and that is talking about why this doesn't work. Let's go to it, please.
The government has insisted that the increase in whale deaths off the East Coast has no relationship to the wind industry's high decibel pile driving and boat activity. But now, according to friend of the show Michael Schellenberger, a new documentary will challenge that notion.
Here's a clip of Thrown to the Wind, a public production.
There aren't many places where the North Atlantic right whale can go. It's destined to extinction.
It sounds like they're like, oh, it's on pile driving.
What the United States is looking at is thousands of wind turbines in an area that our whales, our dolphins, our marine life, where they live, where they migrate, where they breed.
It's only when they started going into the wind lease areas that we believe that the whales are dying.
So those red dots are whale deaths.
Precisely.
What a scandal.
Here to delve more into this issue is investigative journalist Michael Schellenberger, who helped research and produce this documentary that is being released today. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks for having me.
So what is the argument, the causal argument, that between whale deaths and the introduction of these wind turbines?
Sure. There's basically two mechanisms that we think are causing the whale deaths. The first is there's boat traffic in areas where there has not historically been boat traffic. And we know that whales tend to hide from the boats. They know that they're a threat and they avoid them. And so when you add new boat traffic to areas that had been previously untrafficked, you're going to get more boat strikes, which are one of the leading causes of death, if not the leading cause of death. The second mechanism is that loud noise that you hear, which is sonar mapping of the ocean floor, eventually will be pile driving to build those wind turbines. The whales run away from those sounds. They're frightened of those sounds. We know that mothers and their calves can split apart and go into feeding less places where there's not as many fish for feeding. They can also make them tired to run away from that, and also can push them into areas where there's a lot of boat traffic. So there's two very well-known mechanisms for how these activities would cause deaths, and the government has been saying that they've been researching this, and we have shown that they have not, either they've not been researching it,
or
they have been researching
it
and discovered what we discovered, which means they've been covering it up. Either of which is a scandal, because they've been reassuring the public that they've been looking into this. We go out on the first boat trip out with an acoustic specialist, and he drops the hydrophone, which is the underwater microphone, into the water, and they discover these unbelievably loud levels, high decibel sounds for sonar tracking. So this is, I think it's a major environmental scandal. I think it's the biggest environmental scandal I've ever worked on in 30 years of environmental advocacy. We are already talking to members of Congress about hearings on this. We need subpoena powers. I believe that both NOAA and BOEM, the two main federal organizations that are responsible for protecting these amazing mammals, of which there's only 340 individuals left, that these agencies have violated their public trust. They have not done what they're supposed to be doing. And I don't trust them. And I don't think members of Congress should trust them. I think the public should not trust them. We need a proper investigation to get to the bottom of what's going on.
Can you tell us more about how the wind energy industry and the oversight, the governmental institutions have responded to the claims you make in this documentary?
They have not responded. They have not responded yet. We are going to take our findings to them with members.
So if you're concerned, as I am, about the whales, then and the dolphins and other aquatic animals, that mammals will be impacted by all this enormously loud noise, then let your legislator know to put a moratorium on this until proper hearings are held. Okay? Now I'm still waiting on your calls. I'd like to hear from you. I'd like to hear your thoughts about. On the one hand, I'm optimistic for those who move to the right places, have the right support system, and are pushing back against the idiocy and the decadency that's occurring in academia and in social media companies and in governmental agencies' overreach, and just start realizing you weren't born for someone else to exploit you your whole life and to live under their thumb and control. So fight back. All right, they're going tribal, and boy, does that ends badly in all cases. Anyhow, I have a special for you today, and I want to thank Josh from our office putting this together. It's a really good special. Here's what you're getting. For the people who want to start now, and a lot of these people I'm sure watched the webinar on Sunday, I'm sorry not everyone was able to get in, probably 1,000 people couldn't because they came too late and our bandwidth was full. But a lot of people want to do as much as they can to control their aging process and to add years onto their life, which is entirely scientifically possible. But you got to know what to do. And the first thing is you have to understand what you've done up to this point that may have prematurely aged you. You may be 60, but biologically you may be 100. You know, because of lifestyle indifference or hurting by the foods you're eating, drinking, drugs taken, etc., sedentary lifestyle, you may have prematurely aged your body by 40 years. So what can we do? First, we educate ourselves. And you're going to get, in this package, you're going to get not one, you're getting two documentaries. Aging is natural, growing old is an option. This is the first time we've offered the DVD by itself, because I wanted to have a worldwide webinar where I could answer people's questions, and did. That's why I'm still hoarse, because it was 5 hours straight and just a few days ago. And then we're giving you another anti-aging film on top of that. And then we're giving you two products. One product is called the Ultimate Anti-Aging Formula, and the other is the Anti-Aging Elixir. They are different. For example, in the formula, just listen to the ingredients. Vitamin C, vitamin E, vitamin B1, B2, B3, B5, B6, vitamin B12, folic acid, biotin, calcium, magnesium, carnosine, turmeric, resveratrol, coenzyme Q10, NAD, pine bark extract, PPQ. That's a superstar. In fact, here are the real superstars. PPQ, pine bark extract, NAD, coenzyme Q10, turmeric, L-carnosine, those are superstars. And you're getting it all in a vegan capsule. All right, so that's one thing, and those you would take in the morning. But then you're also getting a liquid, and you shake it, you refrigerate it, you shake it, and because it's not homogenized. And all this is organic. You're getting organic apple juice, mangosteen, tart cherry concentrate, pomegranate concentrate, acai puree, mango, nopal, noni, turmeric, ginger, sea buckthorn bark, buckthorn, vitamin C, papaya, pectin, mangosteen, beetroot, aloe vera, wolfberry, goji berry, elderberry, cranberry, blueberry, kakadu plum, moringa powder, baobab, which is one of the oldest fruits in the world, macai, and graviola with organic stevia. There's nothing else like it in the world. I mean, nothing. Go anywhere, go online, go into any health food store. There is no product that I'm aware of like this. And we were out of it for a year because some of the products were grown in Australia and Africa, and they used them up. So we had to wait for a whole new batch. And I said, fine, we'll just wait. So now we have a back in stock, and I got several thousand bottles. So now it's available to you. So just imagine you take the liquid, and that is a capful per day. Then the other supplements you take, between those two, plus a healthy diet, exercising, wow. So that's our special for today. And so you're getting two documentaries, not one, two. And this would normally cost you $264.96. Today it's only costing you $119. You're saving $145.96. Listen to what I just said. You're saving $145.96. That's more than 55% off the full value. Wow. So if you care about your health, if you care about the aging process, if you care about doing something proactive, now you can. How do you get it? Simple. You can go online, order it yourself, or you can call this number, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, or you can call Neil in the Vitamin Closet Monday to Saturday, noon to 8 at 646-926-5430. 646-926-5430. I don't know anyone in this audience who wouldn't benefit from this package. And again, compare, all right? Compare my supplement that I formulated, the Ultimate Anti-Aging Formula, 120 vegan capsules, and my anti-aging liquid elixir. Compare it with any other product in the world. I only create what I consider the best of the best. And then watch the documentary, Aging is Natural, Growing Old is an Option, How to Add Quality Years to Your Life. Brand new, it has not been offered before this moment. All right? And another documentary on top of that on aging. So that's that. Now, before we go out of the program today, just want to mention that we have our retreat coming up. From what I understand, our first week is full. We have two spots left for the second week. And here's a testimonial of someone who attended one. And let's hear what they have to say about their experience.
Judy, and I'm finishing up 2 weeks in the anti-aging group, and I feel so fortunate to have come
Gary,
to Gary's Villa. It is beautiful here. Trees and grass and flowers and bushes and animals, the peacocks, the donkeys, the chickens, the hens. It's just marvelous being right here with animals. I learned a lot. There's been a lot of wisdom and information passed on by Gary, Luann, and the presenters. The volunteers have been wonderful. The food is marvelous. I personally got a very unique experience. I've been carrying around a lot of baggage from the past, and I know I've been wanting to let it go, but have not been able to. In Peter Resnick's workshop, I was able to actually let it go. I was crying. I could feel the physical sensation of letting go of all the past that I've been carrying around with me. And I'm going to start crying now because it's amazing. So I'm so thankful to Gary and all the staff here. I highly, highly, highly recommend that you guys come.
Hi, my name is Jan Ford, and I'm so excited to have spent 2 weeks here.
Well, we're out of time, but that's just one person's experience. And she is right. What happens in Peter Resnick's workshop is nothing less than phenomenal. He'll be there the second week, by the way, giving workshops every day. So we're so fortunate to have this brilliant man share his wisdom with us. If you would like to join us to have your own unique experiences, call 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. That's Luann's number. And hopefully there'll be room for you. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.